Hey there, welcome back to Seeking Scale. Andy, how's it going?
It's going. Yeah, it's like work things are going well. The NFL growth is continuing. Life things are going. Recording in the new office at our new house. The house is very damp right now. Yeah, I was telling you before, yeah, we had the carpets cleaned. And then we had just a really rainy weekend. And so just nothing dried out, even with fans going and all of that. Had to do a nice Home Depot run to get some dehumidifiers. And those are just blasting throughout the house right now. And yeah, someday this will be a bit more habitable rather than the swamp we're in. But
yeah,
we grew up in Florida, so maybe the swamp isn't so bad. I don't know.
Oh, man. It's a quick story. We had our roof replaced. And we're like, we're just going to go out of town, go visit family while this is happening. The roofers punctured through the roof and punctured the air conditioning condensate line while we were out of town. Oh. And it's like little trickle, right? We were gone for 5 days. There's just all over all the wood floors. So anyways, it's a two-story house. So like just damage everywhere. We had humidifiers in the house for 3 weeks because it was in Louisiana. And yeah, shit just doesn't dry out there ever.
No, right.
And they are so freaking loud. And we had a newborn and a two-year-old. And I was just like, they're going to be deaf. Like they're just going to be deaf. Couldn't go in half the house because the fans were so loud. It was terrible.
The joys of home ownership. But
yeah,
I'm glad that I'm just dealing with a slightly damp house and all of our belongings are in like two rooms, but it could be much worse. There's no newborns.
It could be worse.
Yeah. There's no real damage. It's just wet. But yeah.
You'll have a story like that soon, I'm sure. I mean,
Yeah, exactly. That's kind of what I'm worried about, but we'll see. Last time we connected on this, we dug into QA and the process you were trying to figure out of working with an agency. What specifically do you need to hire for? How will it change your own internal processes? Where are you at with all of that?
So I think this will end up tying into a larger topic that we'll talk about later. But yeah, I wanted to give an update because one of the really valuable things for me of doing this podcast is talking to you about things that we're going through and formulating how I feel and how we're approaching them in a coherent enough way. I'm not embarrassed to share it as a podcast episode. Like you kind of have to have your shit together to say, we're going to do this thing. And, you know, hundreds of people are going to listen and say, that's cool or that's not smart or whatever. On top of, you know, you being a filter for it. And so you and I had a healthy disagreement, I think, in the last episode about we wanted to hire a QA person. And I think it ties into what we're going to talk about like later, maybe as like, it's a thing we want to get off our plate. And so we as, you know, founders and growing businesses think that just like a person who owns a thing will take it off our plate. And whether or not that happens is to be seen. And I think there's some things that are really challenging to hire there. But specifically to the QA in our world, after you and I talked, I went and had a conversation with our engineering manager and our our designer who's kind of like head of product right now. Like we don't have a person that owns product, but just a really savvy guy, worked in an agency before, so has seen like how product is done a bunch of different ways, as opposed to a developer who's only been a developer at one place. What we came out with was really, it shouldn't be my responsibility. And so that was like a pretty good thing that both of them said. It's like, it's not your responsibility, but somebody has to own it. And kind of where we landed was the best way to QA is in the development process with unit and integration tests. So automated tests that are running all the time, checking, you know, our code for interactions. Blah, blah, blah. Our story, our history with testing is that for the first 2 years, we didn't have any. And like seasoned developers will laugh or cry at that. And you hear people like Derek Reimer say, you just do testing for the beginning. It slows you down for the first few months. And then the next couple of years, it makes you be a lot faster. And like, we're 100% seeing that now that our product doesn't have really great test coverage so that when we do things, we have to really test it manually a lot to make sure that the new thing we did didn't break the old stuff. Instead of hiring a person, we're going to devote like development resources to improving test coverage, especially over a critical path. Like I want to create an account. I want to upgrade to paid. I want to publish an episode. I want to update the cover image, all this kind of stuff. That coverage is like pretty good already, but it needs to be like 110%. Everything about that and everything that touches that needs to be tested. And then the other part of it was that does lie on me, but is really healthy for later on, is like just spending a little more time writing out words of how I want the thing to be. Because right now it's just in a call with our designer, with Francois, And I say, Francois, we want to build this integration thing where automations and whatever. And he goes and just understands it and puts it in Figma. And the problem is then anyone testing later can't look at Figma and understand all the words that I said during that call. And so I don't know exactly how we're going to do it, but I think we might record those calls and have them transcribed and just put that in the GitLab, you know, issue for a new feature that we're building. But definitely I will take the responsibility of at least having bullet points of it's going to do this and it's going to do this, it's going to do this, it's going to do this. And then Francois, our designer, and Maru, our front-end developer, are going to be the ones to do user acceptance testing on our testing site before it even gets to staging. So we have three environments: production, test, staging, and testing. Testing is like easy. You can just swap out a Git branch and the new stuff is there. Staging is like exactly the production live environment, but just not, you know? So like it runs through the CDN and it's multi-tenant, all this kind of stuff. And so, you know, them being able to go poke around on something on the testing environment means that like when they go poke around on it and stuff, it's good. You know, the buttons are the right colors and the thing does the right thing and it sends the email when it should. And then basically go into staging is just, does something in the build and deployment process break from like a DevOps and sysadmin perspective? Otherwise, it's going out. Because, and this is, you know, whatever, more dirty laundry than probably people care about, we have run into some situations where things get to testing or to staging, like right before they're going live, and I or Matt or whoever are like, well, this is just not right. We need to fix this. And what that ends up doing is just kind of like blocking our ability to push new stuff, because there's this thing that's, you know, almost 1 foot out the door and it just can't go out. And so nothing else can go out either. I think, you know, having user acceptance testing done before something gets into that kind of pipeline, because it's like a one-way street from like a dev and a Git perspective, as far as I understand. Like once something goes in there, then like things have happened that are really difficult to change. And so just making sure that from a lot of perspectives, you know, automated and unit testing, the thing works like it should. The product description and the spec that I write out, you know, along with Francois and the designs are really well understood. And then, you know, they can do the testing in an environment where if it's wrong, it's cool. We'll just go fix it. And that can take however long it needs to. And it's not affecting other things that other people are doing.
Yeah. I mean, a lot to unpack there. It's interesting. I was just talking, so we're doing one-on-ones this week. I was catching up with Eduardo, who's one of our front-end developers. And one of the big things he was pushing for is just, yeah, unit tests, because we have none. That's always one of the issues when we release things, is just Matt is basically the only one, or I can, but not quite to the degree Matt can, but like Matt's really the only one that's going to know what things could break and know how to test it and see, okay, is this working? Did it break that? And he'll give it like, all right, this is good to go live, but it always breaks something else. Literally every single time something else breaks. Matt usually is able to catch the bigger things, but sometimes it's just like a different sport than he was looking at or whatever else. And so that's really going to be one of our priorities going forward, is just better testing. Because as we were talking last week, I was thinking the same thing. It's okay, like a lot of this seems like it could be automated to a degree. There's the actual unit test, but then there's Brian, our other front-end developer, has talked about just like kind of smoke tests, which can be things like like having some script basically automatically run through the app and treat it like a user would to just see, did this complete? And like other things like that. And so that's probably the direction we're going to go when things settle down a bit. And for us, that'll likely be December, January, February, sometime around then. When I was hearing you describe a lot of it, I mean, one thing that still came to my mind is just not having that product owner, because I think it's the more you can be upfront about, like the more clear you can be upfront, the better. Like that will help everyone down the line understand exactly what your intentions were. And that gives some, I guess, stability rather than playing a true game of telephone. But they're not going to, like, language isn't perfect. And so it's not as though you're going to be able to describe everything so precisely that they're going to know exactly what you meant. And there's going to be some context that you weren't able to get. So in my head, when you're talking about it, I was just thinking, it seems like Francois, like if you and him have this discussion up front, he has the context. He has all these things. And it could
for him to write the spec.
And for him not just to write the spec, communicate it throughout the process and check mm-hmm. in and make sure that the spec is being followed and answer the questions. Because I think you could still give the clear bullet points up front, but I think there just has to be that one person who's going to flesh out all that extra context that's needed and then be there to answer questions along the way. Because I just think we've tried just writing super detailed spec and it takes an insane amount of time. Things are still missed. And so the developers still are going to come back to us to ask more questions. And we've gone more the other way where it's give more context around what we're trying to do, let them kind of figure out how to do it, and then just be semi-available or be available but as needed to clarify things along the way. And that's worked pretty well. But I just think unless you want to be that one that they're going to, it's going to be tough to make sure that the context carries throughout the process.
Yeah. And I'd not even considered that he, you know, could or should be the one to, you know, yeah, write the spec to go along with the Figma docs, because he's, you know, he has all that information, and then be the one that folks go back to. I think that for that one, he already is. I'm quite sure of it, that like he is the one that hands the design off to the developers. And then they're the ones that go to him and say, hey, when this thing happens, you know, if he doesn't cover up a use case of a status or something, what should happen? Most of the time they go to him anyhow. So I think just formalizing that.
Right. Sense. It just seems being more explicit about that. And then that can let him know, okay, I need to really flesh this out a bit more with Greg. Maybe like I need to ask some more questions so that I can give these answers with a high level of confidence.
Yep. Yeah. So, I mean, you know, for me, we talk about like process a lot, and like, this is the podcast process. We talk about a thing, I think are quite transparent here with the things we can be transparent about, and just talking through them and then thinking about it in between is really, really cool. Like it's really, this has been a good outcome for me and I feel good about like where we're going with it. Yeah.
Yeah. I think on our end, it's the development process for us has, I think we're hitting our stride more now that pretty much all the refactoring on the front end has been done. Eduardo and Brian are able to move really quickly, and they're able to do so in a way where it doesn't require a ton of management from us. It doesn't require super detailed specs. But yeah, there's still more we can do to just like tighten things up a bit on testing, that sort of thing. Backend still has some work to do, but it's just trying to figure out, okay, where are the bottlenecks? And I'm confident on the dev side of things, like, we're improving. There's more we can do, but we're going to do that. And it's just figuring out like where the other bottlenecks lie and how to break through those. And yeah, it's definitely on kind of my side of the business, the marketing side of things, the support side of things, and just trying to navigate that is kind of my top. I feel like it's my top priority right now. There's a few initiatives where I'm trying to project managing and keep pushing forward, but like, big picture stuff, it's just, yeah, figuring out what do we need to do to just get this side of the business operating like the dev side is.
Are there specific people or areas of responsibilities? I don't want to say tasks, that like diminishes it too much, I think, but like things that need taking care of that you can't or don't want to take care of that you're like thinking about?
Yeah, so there's a mix of things where there's... On support, we're spread a little thin in the sense we're responding quickly, but it's taking up a lot of Jordan's time when he has other things around content creation that's gone really well. And I wish he could spend more time on that. And then Ross and Chris are part-time, and there's other things I wish they could do, but their time is spent just pretty much just purely on support. So I think part of it is just we need more bandwidth on support and figuring out the best way to do that, to free those guys up to elevate what they're working on. That part, I don't know if you feel this way, but like I just get a lot more clarity looking at other parts of the business than the things like I'm owning. And so it's like that part to me is pretty straightforward. It's just like clearly, okay, they could be doing this to get there. We need some help. Here's how we get that help. Let's do that. It's the more traditional marketing side that I really own, which frankly we haven't done a ton of. That is like my backlog just doesn't end on that. It doesn't move either. And there's the admin stuff and everything else. So it's like trying to just figure out, okay, what is the role on the marketing side of things that I need that would unlock this a bit more? And it's I don't want to fall in the trap of just trying to find this person who can do everything, because no one can. I can't do all those things. And so it's just figuring out, okay, like, is there some person who can do a couple of these things, or should I just focus on one and have them do that? Do I do things that are more experimental? I don't know. It's just very unclear to me where to go from there.
How do you balance? So you mentioned to me after we stopped recording last week that, yeah, you really need someone to manage or have like vision over the whole kind of life cycle of, you know, website visitor, prospect, lead, trial, conversion. How do you balance that? You know, which to me says like, that's a jack of all trades, full stack marketer, with that's probably something you're really good at. And do you need a paid acquisition specialist, or do you need a copywriter? Do you need a graphic designer to make, you know, amazing, you know, visual elements for the site? Like, how do you balance the prioritization of those two things? Because they're maybe not like mutually exclusive, but they're really different.
Yeah. So I think I have developed like a experience and skill doing that, of having the full funnel view and just thinking about things from that perspective. And so I'm fine owning that myself. And then when it comes to prioritizing, like, where do we focus within that? That's, yeah, it's tough. And I just sort of do not actual calculations, but just in my head, I'm thinking about, okay, how confident am I? It's, I don't know if Sean Ellis, I think, had ICE, which is like impact, confidence, expense, something like that. And there's like PI, which is, I don't even remember what that one stands for, but they're all effectively the same thing. Is you're just trying to figure out, okay, how confident are we in being able to ship this? How confident are we in the impact it will have? And what will the costs and investments look like to get there? And so a lot of it is for the confidence side. This is something I think people don't put enough weight into, is that I'm no mathematician, but like Bayesian probabilities effectively are saying that when something has happened, it's more likely to happen again. If you think based on actual outcomes, that changes probabilities. You can't just say, okay, in a vacuum, here are the probabilities, and then ignore reality of saying, okay, like, how does this change things? So in football, when one receiver catches a ball, it's more likely he's going to catch more balls that game. And if someone doesn't, it's more likely they're not going to get those catches later on. And I think when it comes to prioritization, what I'm getting at is that there are going to be things that are working are just going to be the best place to invest. It's just to keep doing more of those. And so for us, I'm trying to exclusively look at where can we invest more into the areas that are already working. So we've done nothing with paid acquisition, so it's not going to be experimenting with that yet, because it's like we have enough working that we're not doubling down on that I don't think I need to expand beyond that. Once we start getting more of a marketing team in place, that's when I think we can start placing some speculative bets. But it's just figuring out, okay, here's where we're getting some traction. How do we do more of it? How do we do this better? How else can we do it? I don't know if that at all answered your question, but that's just kind of my rambling thoughts on that.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I definitely agree. And I think we've talked about before that like a lot of us stop too early when it comes to doubling down on things that are already working. The last 20% is really hard, or the last half of something is really hard. Like getting a paid acquisition campaign up and going is, you know, one thing, and then taking the time to optimize it is quite a different thing. Or just like putting out a blog post a week is one thing and you see some results from that. But like really owning inbound marketing is like just a lot more involved. And so I think we see this shiny thing and say, oh, we just go fucking run Facebook ads and it's going to make us money. Yeah. And I think there's so much you don't know about those other channels that make it quite a bit riskier.
And I think people feel as though they get to that 80% much faster than they actually do. Because yes, like when you really get something down, squeaking up those incremental great gains are very difficult. But I don't think people pick off nearly enough low-hanging fruit. One thing I've been thinking about it is having Jordan help with the copywriting, have Jordan help with more things for my plate. But the things he's doing right now, they're working. And so the video content he's creating, the office hours, all that stuff is like working really well. And so it just seems like it'd be crazy to have him pull him, not off of that, but pull him into new things rather than just find ways to get more results from what he's already doing. And so that's been one shift I've had, is just, okay, in rather than trying to make Jordan into the jack of all trades, he's shown what he's done really well. Let's figure out how to have him keep leveling up there, how to get more results from that, all of that. And that's kind of the direction we're going there. So it's figuring out, okay, what are the other areas where if he's more specializing in that, what does that leave open? And honestly, I'm not sure. That's why I think I've been talking about contractors, because I think some of the stuff is either like writing a couple emails a week is not a full-time job, or just there's a few projects that aren't going to be ongoing, but we need someone to make a big push on. And that's the stuff that I'm struggling with, is just figuring out where to even begin, because I'll be the one doing the hiring. I'll be the one doing the onboarding and training. And I can't just bring on a bunch of people at once, even if they are contractors, like whatever. And the more I do try to take on at once, it means other things are going to fall behind. So like, that's really where I'm struggling, is just figuring out, okay, like this is the spot. And so like on the support part, like it's clear support team needs more bandwidth. That one's straightforward. That's probably going to be the next move we make. But after that, it's just, yeah, up in the air.
You touched on something that I think is really important. And it is like the resulting obligation that we have.
No, I mean, it is an opportunity cost for you, because it's you, if you are going to be hiring, doing the interviews, doing all that, then afterwards training, working with them, there are things that you won't be able to do because you're doing this.
Yeah. And it's that, yeah, I mean, the interviewing, yeah, that's the thing, but like it's the ramp up and onboarding that is just massive. A lot of us don't think about it. I mean, case in point is we rolled out, like we did a retreat last week and we rolled out, you know, the Q4 OKRs. And it's all sales. You know, it's all sales because we have two new salespeople. And I mean, it literally is like we hired these two salespeople. And so the whole company is getting behind these two people for a quarter. And that's a little extreme, maybe. I don't think it's wrong. Yeah, maybe we can just, you know, hey, this and maybe 20% over there or something. But we're kind of taking a stance that like the product is in a really good spot. We launched our new website today. So all of that is in a pretty good spot. So like product is going to support the salespeople selling like enterprise level stuff. Marketing obviously is going, not just like marketing to drive new trial signups for the, you know, regular hosting stuff, but marketing is working to drive sales qualified leads, and support even, you know, is working with these bigger kind of level customers, you know? And like, when you say that, then like this one hire you made, you know, 2 months ago ends up having a huge impact on the focus of the business. And so I know you know that, but we're just seeing it like to the extreme right now. If you hire a copywriter or you hire a whatever, you know, community manager or something, like it's gonna shift your focus a lot. Whereas you think, oh, this is gonna take my time away from this thing, it might just really put you in that a lot for like some period of time. And maybe on the other side, then it's taken off. But yeah, I just we've seen it kind of over and over, I think, that like first was developers, then kind of support, somewhere in there kind of marketing, and now it's sales. And like it's 6 months, you know, to get these groups really, really jamming.
Yeah. No, and when you break it down like that, I definitely agree, because yeah, for the longest time we are just so short staffed on development, and there's so many issues coming up where it just felt like we couldn't get ahead. And that was why we started looking for more senior people to come in who could take more ownership and just help us get some traction and then start getting our head above water and then go from there. And yeah, I mean, like it was dev for the longest time. And then it was like, okay, we've got a little breathing room. Let's bring on someone's support. And then it's like, okay, now I need to focus on this, build some better processes around that, get them in place. Then just bring on another one. And it's just, yeah, it's like you need to have owners in the business who can oversee that, or you're doing it all yourself. But I don't think any one person can oversee setting up multiple departments or multiple processes like that at the same time.
At once. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And so for you with sales right now, what do you feel has to go on the back burner because this is your focus? Like what would be the next thing that really needs more attention, or where do you see things at there?
Yeah. I mean, I think that this is starting to wind down a little, like we're 6 weeks into these guys being on board. And so I'm starting to peel some of my time off to focus on marketing. So that's what it is for me, is it's really helping Sam not that Sam can't do it or isn't doing a great job, but just like I have skills and I have some time, and that's a pretty good use of my time because I'm not good at much else. And so, you know, still spending a lot of time supporting the sales guys, and so are Matt and Sam, and I think they will continue to through this quarter. But another big part of it in making them successful is just getting them more leads. So it really is, in the end, it's kind of everything for the sales folks.
I want to, next week we should talk more about the retreat, but it just made me think about, I know a lot of companies will do sort of themes. This quarter we're focused on whatever it may be. Like they'll come up with like quirky names for whatever, but it lets people know, in, okay, this is our priority right now. This is the focus, this is what we're all aligning towards. And it feels like that's natural and smart. And like right now for you guys, it's just building out, like this quarter is about building a sales process, and maybe two quarters is, whatever it may be. It feels weird to be that focused, but at the same time, because you know all the other things outside of your blinders are there, but it seems like that's really the only way to make real progress there.
Yeah, and I think the qualifying thing is, it is the one thing, but it's not the only thing. One of our developers is like, so are you telling me that, you know, the goal for this quarter is just for us to release three features? And I was like, no, like that absolutely has to get done, right? But then there's all the other, you know, maybe that's half of our development team's work for the quarter. And the rest is, you know, shoring up the product and automated tests and, you know, all these things that we want to do and some other kind of features. But like, if we do this, then the bigger company goal will happen. And so that's the first thing that we all should be thinking about when we come in every day.
Yeah. I'm hoping next week, I'm kind of just publicly stating this, or at least however public this is, that I'll have a better idea of getting at least things in motion on making the support hire and having some plan in place for marketing help. Because I think, yeah, it's making me realize, okay, if I'm bringing on another support person or even ramping up a current support person, I need to give support more attention, because it's kind of been something where we have really good people in place there. I've just let them run with it. But I think, all right, if we're going to start investing more there, I need to take some more focus in that to make sure we're kind of just operating effectively. But I want to know, okay, what's next? How do I start building this sort of out on the marketing right. side of it?
Right. Yeah. Right. Yeah. I think it'll be interesting for everyone, me included for sure, to just hear how you think through that process, because like the details are different for everyone, but as we can abstract away the lessons that everyone can take, I think that would be really helpful.
Yeah. And as always, if anyone has any feedback or suggestions, you can reach out to us at podcast@seekingscale.com. But yeah, I appreciate everyone listening in. It was fun catching up, Craig. And hopefully next week it'll be from a less damp recording environment for me.
Sounds good. Bye, everyone.
All right. See ya.